John Martin performing May You Never in 1973. You're listening to Planet Waves FM. My name is Eric Francis Coppolino. We are part of the Pacifica Radio Network. That's a community radio project. Planet Waves is a kind of a contributor and sponsor, and then in exchange we get to run the content that is distributed by Pacifica, including the ability to do things like a large swath of Amy Goodman's program from yesterday, which we'll be doing in the third segment, celebrating Father Dan. We are supported by your memberships to Planet Waves, and there are several levels of membership. We can make them as inexpensive as you need them to be, or as vastly, wildly expensive and lavish as you want them to be. And you get things for them, but most of what you get from Planet Waves, you just get, and there's no commercials, and it's just available freely. And there are some extra things you get with membership, and like, for example, our backstage pass holders get all of the birthday readings included, and the spring reading, and the mid-year reading, and we also offer these things separately. So, for example, a little bit later in the week, I'm going to do the Taurus birthday reading. I do a birthday reading for every sign. Every sign every year, basically, and the reading works for your sun, your moon, or your rising. So it's the Taurus birthday reading, but it's also the Taurus rising and the Taurus moon reading, and these are really excellent astrology. You know that I put love and care into all the work that I do, and I spent more than 20 years both as a public astrologer writing horoscope columns and simultaneously as a research astrologer, simultaneously working with clients all over the world and in all walks of life. And so in these reading projects I do, like the Taurus reading, like the spring reading, first of all, I bring all of that knowledge and experience to bear into the work, and then it's designed to be excellent astrology for the people, affordable to get. It's not hundreds of dollars like it is to get a private reading, but you actually get more astrology, if that's what you like, in the prepared readings, because my in-person work is much more focused on specific issues that people are having. And so, you know, actually resolving things and working through kind of like biographical material and family background and stuff. In these readings, there is lots and lots of really lavish astrology that is presented in human form. I never get lost in the sauce of the lingo. I was a writer long before I was an astrologer and taught to be clear about what I am saying. And one of the people who taught me how to do this business was a man named Jonathan Kaner. And as I sit here and say this, I can barely even believe I'm saying the words, that Jonathan is gone. He left the planet sometime early Monday morning, UK time. I guess he was found in his office and is believed to have died of a heart attack. That information is not there. I heard that he had a heart attack a year ago, but was believed to have made a good recovery. But in any event, Jonathan has left us. And the last, let me see if I can find this, his last horoscope for Sagittarius on the day that he died, Monday's Sagittarius horoscope, read, quote, this is Jonathan Kaner's writing, "We aren't here for long. We should make the most of every moment. We all understand this, and yet we forget it many times. And yet, don't we forget it many times? We get caught up in missions, in battles, and desires. We imagine that we have forever and a day. In one way, we may be right, for are we not eternal spirits, temporarily residing in finite physical form?" That was Jonathan's last horoscope for his sign. It's even for Jonathan, unusually philosophical piece of writing. I have a long relationship with Jonathan. I first encountered him when I was living in Miami in 1999. And I just want to, since I have my own stories of Jonathan that are about his largely about his supporting my work, his entering my life and putting me in front of 12 million people, basically. Many of you know me because you first read me writing for Jonathan in the Daily Mirror or the Daily Mail or on Caner.com or in Sydney or Melbourne or who knows, in Japanese or Italian somewhere. I covered for Jonathan's vacations for 4 years. I had the honor of doing that. He used to have many writers covering for his vacations, like he'd have one person a day. And then I ended up doing it exclusively for 4 years. So I've got this awesome collection of columns I wrote and had the honor and pleasure of being his vacation ticket. One thing that is clear is that this guy worked hard. He worked hard. I got certain work habits from Jonathan, like have a Macintosh on every desk. That's something I picked up directly from Jonathan Caner. I've got a lot of little work habits that I picked up from him, and this is someone who embodied his work. There was no separation. He did have a John and Jonathan thing going on, where Jonathan was the famous astrologer and John was just John, J-O-N, the guy that we knew. But really, he embodied his work with every ounce and cell in his being. And the way that I got to meet Jonathan was basically, I like to say that we were introduced by William Lilly, a 17th century astrologer. Now, how could we possibly be introduced by William Lilly? Well, we kind of were. In 1998, I went to England, and the reason I went to England was because I was very new at writing my horoscope, but it was 98, and but was becoming well-known in the UK, which is amazing because the UK is somewhere where astrology is a real thing. It's not considered a joke or a parlor game by a great many people. Of course, there's detractors and the Royal Astronomical Society likes to play pranks on us and all that stuff. But really, there is a different approach to mysticism in the UK. That whole swath of the world, it is different. And the art that comes out of there is different. The music is different. And the astrology is different. And I was first kind of lured into the practice of astrology by a Brit named Patrick Walker. So anyway, I went to England and I knew to make a pilgrimage to the astrology shop at Covent Garden, this old, amazing astrology store in Covent Garden, London. And while I was there, I met the owner, Robert Curry, the then owner, and I signed the mailing list for the astrology shop. And Robert knew I was a professional astrologer and was published and wrote horoscopes. So one day, a couple of years later, I got an email from Robert addressed to all the professional astrologers on his list. Maybe there were 50 of us. About saving the cottage of William Lilly. Now, William Lilly has a very important role in Western astrology because he was the first person to write an astrology book in the English language. Up to that point, all the astrology had been in Latin or Greek or Aramaic or, you know, whatever, Arabic, all these old Hebrew, all these old ancient languages had astrology texts, but no one had written a book in English. There were some bad translations of some of it, but William Lilly, a beautiful soul, wrote the first book called Christian Astrology, published in 1647. And the only reason Christian astrology is particularly Christian is because he believed in being loving, right? So he calls it Christian astrology, which is a good thing to call your astrology book, you know, soon after the Inquisition, right? So Christian astrology comes out and Lilly lives a long time, and his book became the basis of all astrology books, and in many ways, his astrology is the kind of foundational level of traditional astrology that we have. So I get this email, and all these professional astrologers are on it, and I notice that Jonathan Caner's email address is on the list, open, published. It was, I think, his baby daughter's email account that he took over. It was like Tia Leela 6 or something at Yahoo or something. Jonathan Caner says right there. So I'm like, oh, that's cool. I've got Jonathan Caner's email. So I wrote him a note and said, hi, I love your column. And hey, I write horoscopes too. So we got into a correspondence for a while, and then we lost touch. Sometime around 2000, we lost touch. One day in 2002, I get an email from this guy, David Nicholson, who says, look, Jonathan's going on vacation. He wants you to cover his column for one day. Pick your day. So that's like I call that getting the call. That's like, you know, you've been taking guitar lessons for a while, and then, you know, you get the call from Derek Trucks that he wants you to go on tour with him or something. That's what this was like. It's the big time. And he was writing for the Mirror at the time. I'm like, sure. Well, I was nervous as all get out. I'd only been writing my column for a few years by that point, but still, I knew what I was doing. I was confident in my work, and I worked my ass off on that column. And, you know, way over-prepared the astrology that I had to simplify everything, and it was a hit. And they invited me back. I think John was at Rainbow Gathering or something like that. And they said, we need you to do another day. Pick your day. You get first pick. Wow. So I did. And I picked the day of an eclipse. I wrote a lot of horoscopes for Jonathan during eclipses. I don't know if he liked to take vacations during eclipses. And then I would, and at first when there were other writers, I would choose the day of an eclipse whenever I could because I wanted to do more of it. So I would just do things on eclipses that you want to do more of. So in this way, just having a little chutzpah to write to the guy and recognize he's a person, and I'm going to say hello and share my work, that's how I got to know Jonathan Kaner and ended up working for him for four solid years, doing his column and doing a cue and a column. So then I ended up meeting with him and living in his place in London for a few weeks. So I was a stand-in at the Mirror, one of the big tabloids in London, right at the time when he was negotiating a better deal with the Daily Mail, a much bigger, more conservative, but more powerful paper with a much bigger budget than the Mirror had. And he wanted to move papers and went to court because he had a 6-month notice thing and all this stuff. And 6 months go by, and I wrote to Dave Nick, my boss in Kaner's organization, my sub-editor, actually. When I say boss, I mean it with love. And so I said, Dave, Nick, have they got anybody yet? And he said, no, write to Jonathan. So I sent Jonathan an email and said, you know, what do you think? And he said, when can you get here? This was a Thursday. I said, Sunday. I just randomly said Sunday. Figured I'll need a couple of days to pack my bags. So he's like, good, I'll see you Sunday. So I do this, and I just moved to Seattle. I moved off of Vashon. I've been in Seattle for one month, and I got a cheap, somehow, with 4 days' notice, I got a dirt cheap plane ticket and flew halfway around the world, first from Seattle to New York and then New York to London. And Jonathan sent a car, very classy guy, sent a car to pick me up at the airport, and that's it. I was in Europe and didn't come back home for 8 years to Seattle. I left my apartment and just kind of like tidied up and got on a plane and took me to Gooch Place, Jonathan's apartment, and rang the bell. And suddenly I'm standing in Jonathan Kaner's living room talking to Jonathan Kaner. And he says, well, I know you're really tired, so you can stay here if you want, or you can ride up to Yorkshire with me. I'm like, that's easy. I'll ride up to his other place. So, now mind you, I've known him like half an hour, and call a car. I don't know how we did this exactly, but we end up at the train station and we get on the train and we sit down in a first class carriage for the 2-hour ride up to Yorkshire, where his home is. He has a little apartment in London. Had a little apartment in London. And for the next 2 hours, I got the most concentrated business lecture of my life. Now, Jonathan did not like to talk about astrology, but he was happy to talk about the business of astrology, which is good because I was new in the astrology business, trying to figure out how he did this. And he basically told me everything in that approximately 2-hour train ride and sketched out his whole business plan for changing from the Daily Mail to the Daily Mirror to the Daily Mail, and furthermore, his plan to have me take over his column in the Daily Mirror. Now, this is, I mean, really, it was like sitting on a train with Jerry Garcia, and he's got the whole plan for how he's going to make you into a rock star. So I you know, kept my cool and just listened, and it's like that's what was happening. And so I still remember everything he told me on that trip, and I pretty much use it, you know, to conduct business right now. Because he was a very, very talented astrologer, but also a very clever businessman. Knew how to do it, and turned a horoscope column into a $2 million. That's like $3.5 million a year business. Really, that's impressive, right? A little horoscope column. Okay, so we get to his place, and he feeds me, and I basically passed out for 3 days, and sleeping off this huge trip and this huge adjustment. And meanwhile, I'm writing his column. So I guess I'm getting up, because he had me in the paper for the specific reason of getting me into the Daily Mail. So this is like, he didn't have to do any of this, right? And nor did he have to claim to be taking a vacation to leave me in the paper to make it easier for me to get the job, which he was doing. But he's paying me $500 a day to write his column, all so that I can get the job at the Daily Mirror. And meanwhile, I'm being introduced around to his whole circle of friends, and like, I'm the guy who writes Jonathan's column. And everyone's like, you know, practically bowing when they meet me and kind of like, hi, you know, it's just me. So we go back to London a few days later, and so begins his plot to get me into the Daily Mirror as the Daily Astrologer. Now, he did not need to do any of this, nor did he need to give me the keys to his lavishly gorgeous flat on Googe Place in this totally exclusive little shishi corner of London for 3 weeks. He camped out with his girlfriend for 3 weeks and left me the keys to his apartment. This is Jonathan Kaner. This all that optimistic stuff in his column, all that like, oh, every, you know, this is actually how he related to the universe. He related to existence from a place of total abundance. When he says he's an unreconstructed hippie, this is what he meant. He meant, yeah, man, my stuff is your stuff, and sure, I'll kick you $500 a day to write my column, and I'll claim to be on vacation, and I'm going to make sure you get a fucking job interview up at the features desk of the Daily Mail and Mirror, because he was going to the Mail, and he did not want to leave his previous slot in the Mirror in kind of incompetent hands. And so he basically pulled every string he could possibly pull, and it didn't work out. I didn't get hired by the Daily Mirror. I lost the competition. It was really down to two people, but I didn't really care that much. I mean, it would have been amazing, and it was like staggering amounts of money involved. But I was open to having that much money. And that was one of the first experiences I had, where I had to learn that money is energy and how to open up to money as energy. And it's easy, when you're hanging out with this completely charming, down to earth, extraordinarily generous, friendly, kind of hilarious, short millionaire waddling around and giving you things and enriching my life, which he had been doing for years up to that point. I mean, I kind of wasn't very well known, and then suddenly I'm in front of 12 million people on a regular basis. This is Jonathan Kaner. So at that time in his career, he was with a business manager named Mark Winter, and the two were quite a pair. Jonathan, maybe he was about like 5'6", a little bit pudgy and bald, but devastatingly charming guy, accompanied by his manager, Mark Winter, this Capricorn, right? Jonathan was Sagittarius to the hilt. Sag rising, Sag sun, so forth. Sag Saturn. Mark Winter, tall, slender, Seville Row type of suit wearing guy who was like the business brain behind the whole thing. Kaner churned out ideas. Mark would kind of organize them and put them to work and hold the organization together. And there was a third partner, a technical partner, who I don't know the person's name. And the three of them basically cooked up this empire out of Jonathan's writing talent. And so I got to know Mark Winter, and who I absolutely loved. Mark, sadly, about 5 years ago, passed away from a brain tumor. But just like Jonathan, Mark Winter was an unbelievably generous person. We had an episode where I was trying to get planetwaves.eu, and I needed some kind of permanent registration in the UK. So I contacted Mark, and he pays all the fees, gets the domain, gives Planet Waves the domain. And I'm like, how much do I owe you? And he said, what's a few hundred quid between friends? And that was it. He really meant it. I mean, he really meant it. So the generosity that you felt coming from Jonathan and from his organization and the spirit that he put into his work was actually a real person, actually fully genuine. It's just how he lived. Now, I have a story from somebody I mentioned in the article about the birthday of, I better be able to find these notes, hold on here, of Her Majesty, Queen Elizabeth. In that article, if you recall, if you happen to see it, there was a photo of a young woman's ass with a crown superimposed over it. That would be the ass of Karen Barnes, who had this campaign that she did for years, which was E.R. Elizabeth Regina, meaning the queen, my arse. And she would moon Buckingham Palace. She did this kind of ass in at Buckingham Palace, right, for years. And she had postcards with a picture of her ass and a crown, and it said E.R. my arse on it, right? So this is one thing about Brits is that they can be very formal and stuffy, but then they also spew out Monty Python, right? They get a joke, and I don't think there's a Brit alive who doesn't like when something is funny, in this case cheeky in every sense of the word. So Karen Barnes somehow runs into Jonathan at a music festival and in 2006, and she said she didn't speak to him about wanting his help on this project. And the help involved wanting to mail out 5,000 postcards to every person in the British government, like every member of the House of Lords and the House of Commons and the royal family and various agencies. 5,000 is quite a few postcards, right? So at some point along the way, she keeps seeing Jonathan at music festivals and keeps going up to him and saying hello. And finally she said, look, I do this thing. She hands him a postcard. I do this thing where, like, I moon the queen. And we need some money for postage. We need a franking machine, a thing that's stamps postage stamps onto things. And Jonathan's like, oh, let me see if I can find the exact quote in her notes. To get to funny part of this. Well, anyway, he said, when we met, I sat at his knees in a sunny field, introduced myself, this is Karen Barnes writing, and then showed him a postcard of her ass with a crown on it. And his response was so beautiful, something like, yes, yes, I like this a lot. Tell me more. So she explained things and then asked about astrology and said she loved his column and all that. And an upside-down rainbow appeared in the sky above us. JC told me to get in touch as he offered me a free subscription to his 5-star service and promised me that he'd put the postcards through his franking machine. I'd been spreading my arse in the name of peace for some years by then and needed to raise approximately £1,500. That's like $2,500 to get everything posted. And in the meantime, question Joe Bloggs about peace and politics. I don't know who Joe Bloggs is. It was another 2 years before I went to Jonathan Kaner's franking machines. I numbered 5,000 postcards, and the first 2,500 were coded with I have done my lines now, XK, which corresponds to the White House. I'm not sure what she means. Karen is a somewhat abstract artist, so I'm having to translate out of her Facebook messages. I wrote the postcards to every member of the Parliament and the Lords, the House of Lords, at the end of 2008, then re-edited the list before posting them in 2011, I think. May 9th, around this time. So she just shows up in Jonathan's office with a... Have you ever seen 1,500 postcards? And spews them through his stamping, his postage meter, basically. And postage meters are numbered. You know, it's not like putting a stamp on the envelope where nobody knows where the stamp came from. This franking meter goes right back to Jonathan Kaner at his office. So he was essentially taking responsibility for sending pictures of Karen Barnes' ass to the entire House of Lords and the House of Commons and the royal family and bazillions of people in the British government. And he did. And that is who Jonathan Kaner was, that he was... an activist. He was a peace activist. He loved a good joke. And he was willing to just basically let Karen run, you know, $2,000 worth of postage through his franking machine and take responsibility for it. It wasn't like, I'll buy you some stamps so no one finds out it was me. I imagine he got a huge laugh out of the fact that if anybody in the House of Lords to ask their friends at Royal Mail, you know, at the post office to look up whose meter that was, it would come back to him. That was Jonathan. So, you know, I have lots of other stories like this, and really, he was just always so friendly and, you know, like to let people be free. And his whole astrology column was about you can do it. He was the original, well, right up there with Patrick and a few others, you can do it astrologer. Now, who is this guy astrologically? Well, let's see. We all know he was a Sagittarius, and that happens to be Sag Sun, Sag Rising, and Sag Saturn. So sadly, he died, or perhaps expectedly, he died at his second Saturn return, age 58, one year older than Prince. Jonathan was not the physically healthiest guy. He lived on adrenaline. He lived like a teenager, only as a middle-aged guy, and didn't care about rest if he didn't feel like it, and would, you know, be bopping all over the world from time zone to time zone, and lived like a true Sagittarian global citizen, and lived by the seat of his pants. The column that he wrote and that you read up until very recently was written like real journalism, like you would never read a column that was more than 2 or 3 days old. They were going in that fast, and we had everything timed for when the Australian papers went to bed and when the British papers went to bed, and there were translators had to tackle the work, and so they had a network of translators. I mean, imagine, like, you've got somebody in Japan who's not only dependably putting the column into Japanese, but doing it on time for the deadlines. So he, true blue, dyed-in-the-wool Sagittarian, but Mars in Scorpio and the moon in Scorpio. So he had passion, he had drive. There was a kind of a gat-toothed quality to him, as Chaucer would say, kind of a licentious, basically cocky, sexy quality that he had. And there's your Sag, your moon in Scorpio and your Mars in Scorpio. Now, Sag can have a kind of a audacity to it, but it is not... It can be arm's length removed from the sex vibe. For Jonathan, it wasn't so much, and clearly he was the kind of guy who liked his sugar sweet, to borrow a line from Bob Dylan. And additionally, he had Neptune in Scorpio and the North Node in Scorpio, plus the Moon, plus Mars. So he had a lot of Scorpio in this chart. And then continuing to go anti-clockwise, Libra on the midheaven and Jupiter right behind Libra, right behind that midheaven. So we had the midheaven at 28 Libra. I'll put this chart up on the page. And then Jupiter right behind that. So he had Jupiter as his most elevated classical planet, and certainly the measure of success in his life reflected that. Now, one thing about, like, how did Jonathan Kaner become an astrologer? Here's the story as I know it. Before he was England's most famous astrologer, he, I guess, was England's most famous vegetarian. I mean, in the country of kidney pie and all this, he was England's most famous vegetarian. And his first book was a vegetarian junk food cookbook. And mind you, I didn't know what a famous vegetarian I was, only to discover that he was mortified that I cooked chicken in his apartment. He came in one night and I had cooked meat in his apartment. I'm like, I'm so sorry. We cleaned up, and I had a friend with me. We cleaned up, and that was that. So he writes this vegetarian cookbook, and he's trying to turn England on to vegetarianism, and somehow gets involved in a bean sprout deal, and the bean sprout deal goes bad, and somehow he winds up like on the short end of like a $10,000 bean sprout shortfall, and decided that it was time to go to the United States with his brother Daniel, his kid brother Daniel, and manage Daniel's music career. So it's said in the official biographies that he, you know, went to California to manage Daniel's musical career. But what he told me was the bean sprout story, where he kind of like thought, oh, let's get out of England for a few months while this whole bean sprout thing cools down. So he goes to England and to California, where at that point in the late 70s, Rob Brezhne was already famous. And two things happen in the States. First of all, he discovers Rob Brezhne, who wrote really one of the first, not the first, but one of the first literate horoscope columns, and realized, wow, this can be done interestingly. And then he gets a reading from some kind of a clairvoyant poet who says, you are going to be a very famous astrologer. You're going to write astrology for the millions. And I doubt it had occurred much to him before that time. So he finishes up, and I guess things had Bean Sprout Gate had cooled down sufficiently. He comes back to England and starts studying at the Faculty of FAS, Faculty of Astrological Studies, FAS, one of the more famous. There's a number of famous astrology institutes in England. And does his degree program, but then, like, there was some controversy over whether his final paper was submitted on time. And so the last paper of his last class to finish the program, they don't count his final paper. So he never takes a certificate from the Faculty of Astrological Studies. So he's not, in my opinion, has the distinction and the honor of not being a certified astrologer. But he's like, whatever, I don't need your certificate anyway. It's knowledge. So he starts writing his column and built it up. Basically, he just built it up. He gets into some now defunct newspaper, and then gets into one, and then another, and another, and he just makes a business out of it and becomes a well-known astrologer. Okay, a couple of other things. Pluto on the ninth house cusp. There's your international guy. Pluto in Virgo on the ninth house cusp. Ninth house is international. Pluto is what you're obsessed by, and where you do your growth. And so he, one thing for all you evolutionary astrology folks out there, Pluto in Virgo in the ninth is you're going to do your spiritual work internationally. And if you count, and it's work, right? You really have to, being an astrologer, especially a published, daily published astrologer, is not easy. You are on deadline all the time. And you have 12 million people coming to you for spiritual advice every day. Polarity point of Pluto on the ninth is Pluto in the third. So he's doing a lot of his work in the third house, the house of writing, of messaging and communication, and was kind of an embodiment of the third house, ninth house axis. Local, global, writing, publishing, And then Pluto on the ninth is basically a kind of a spiritual obsession in his life. We're going back, reading his chart anti-clockwise. Again, now we come to the eighth house, the house of sex, death, money, power, jealousy, secrets, control, and surrender. The eighth house, death and dowry, as William Lilly put it in the first English language book. And he's got Uranus there. That's the only point used by modern astrology. He's got some other driveway shale like Ceres and the Vertex and Trans-Pluto. But let's just consider Uranus right in Leo in the eighth house. Well, that's making your money in a weird and inventive way, right? The eighth is an important house for how you're going to make your money. And Leo there usually bodes pretty well. Leo is the sign of gold, but then you've got Uranus in there. And Uranus is the sign of weirdos, of planet of weirdos, of inventions, of things that are like not supposed to happen. They're not on the normal, typical menu of things. And that's kind of how he did it. He really did it as an inventor of something weird. By the way, conjunct Trans-Pluto, meaning something very specific and weird. Horoscope column. Nobody had really made that much money on a horoscope column, but most people didn't write horoscope columns that were that good, combined with a business sense. Let's see what else going on here. Speaking of minor planets, a couple of other interesting things. I'll save that for last. I'll tell you I'm saving it for last when I come to it. Eris in Aries conjunct Vesta, exactly. So Eris in this kind of astrology we can think of as the subversive or as the revolutionary, basically. Eris has a revolutionary quality, and it's all about, in Aries, it's about kind of figuring out who you are. And he's got this conjunct Vesta where we do service, you know, where we keep a fire burning. So this is his third, he's got one of these charts from up north, so it's a little weird. But in his third house, he had Eris conjunct Vesta conjunct Eris properly. And here is him leaving the lights on, as they say at Motel 6, leaving the lights on for your search for who you are. Going back to the second house, another house associated with resources, he's got Venus in Aquarius, showing his kind of, as he puts it, unreconstructed hippie colors. The, you know, my flat in downtown London is your flat in downtown London. And hey, my column is your column. Have at it for a couple of weeks. And don't forget to get an appointment with those people. Venus in Aquarius conjunct Pholus, the small cause, the big effect, the genie coming out of the bottle, the astrology for everyone idea, the wealth for everyone idea, also with Chiron in the second house. So this, by the way, was a person who was no stranger to the crisis of self-esteem. He handled it well. That's the thing. He handled it quite well. He got over his self-esteem issues. I never heard the childhood stories, and I'm not familiar with much of his early life, but he, based on astrology, learned how to turn dross into gold, quite literally, and he did, and helped many people basically feel better about themselves. I mean, you know, here again is a way to sum up the theme of the entire Jonathan Kaner horoscope, you know, all 20,000 columns he wrote or so, which was feel better about yourself. And hey, let's all feel better about ourselves. And what better person to put this into daily newspapers all over the world? All right, last thing. Next to last thing. The one that I said would be the last thing. Mercury retrograde in Capricorn. Let's take that apart. Mercury, planet of commerce, planet of communications, retrograde, dancing to the beat of his own drummer. Can hear him saying it in his British accent. In Capricorn, the sign of business, and in first-ish, second-ish. So it's Sag rising, but he's got Mercury in his first by coke houses, but it's in second house by whole signs. So it's combination, first house, I am. Second house, I have. And so he turned that retrograde Mercury that I'm a little weird, but that means I'm going to play your game my way. There's a good way to look at Mercury retrograde in Capricorn, first and second. And he certainly did play their game his way. And Mark Winter, the brilliant business manager, Capricorn Sun, right near that Mercury. And finally, my very favorite thing about Jonathan's chart is Ascendant 24 Sagittarius and change, Sun 26 Sagittarius and change, conjunct the galactic center. Jonathan was the embodiment of the galactic center in that the GC is about things that are so wide you can't get around them, and so tall you can't go over them, and so low you can't get out of them. They are ubiquitous. And he was really became the, especially after Patrick's death in 1995, the ubiquitous astrologer in England. And that Sagittarius galactic core connection is also a connection to what I like to think of as being spiritual home base. That to me is what the galactic center is. The universe is a lot bigger than the galactic center. And a couple of weeks ago, we had the Linnaeakea program with Brent Tully talking about the 100,000 galaxies, of which ours is one, going toward this point in mid-Sagittarius, which, by the way, Jonathan's Saturn was closely conjunct that point by about 3 degrees. And so he served as a kind of galactic, intergalactic condensation unit in the form of this guy who would peck away on the keys of IMAX, basically, and channel in all this knowledge that he shared with us, various different levels, and this Jerry Garcia-like vibe of like, hey, my music is your music. So that was my friend Jonathan Kaner, and served as a fantastic example to me, and someone who may very well have introduced me to you, and introduced me again and again in the pages of the world press as the preeminent American astrologer. I've got to say that it was amazing to hear someone say that. And that one of his greatest gifts to me was to have absolute faith in my ability as an astrologer, and also in my ability to do this as a business that serves very many people. And Planet Waves has always had that Jerry Garcia, Jonathan Kaner thing going on too. I've always liked to make sure that almost everything is available to anyone who needs it, and we never turn anyone away to this day. We're just not that kind of a business. But through Jonathan, I learned, roaming around his empire, his various homes and places and offices and buildings and museum and his posh little yummy apartment in Midtown London, on what kind of a scale you can do it, which is a Sagittarius-sized scale, meaning big, meaning, come on, everybody, the bus is big enough for everyone, and you can get on it. Dave Nick, I'm sure, wrote what I'm about to read to you. One of the great gifts of knowing Jonathan is knowing Dave Nicholson, who basically holds together Jonathan's editorial operation. It has since long before I met him, and still does to this day. He's in England what's called a sub-editor, meaning that you get a job and you make that happen. And so what Jonathan would deliver all of his copy to Dave Nick, and then Dave Nick would make sure that it got out in proper form, tightly copy edited and distributed correctly to all the places around the world that would get it. And so I'm sure this is Dave Nick who wrote, John had a remarkable and unique gift. He does not take it with him. He leaves it with us. All right. That's for now what I have to say besides thank you, Jonathan Kaner. All right. So I heard from Dave Nick, who he's one of the answer men in my life, and I need to know like anything, especially about music. I can write to Dave Nick and like ask for an analysis of lyrics, and he'll pound out an essay at 4 o'clock in the morning in between everything else. And I asked him who Jonathan's favorite musicians were, and John Martin, one of them, and Steely Dan, another. So I'm going to play my personal favorite Steely Dan song called Your Gold Teeth 2, and follow the imagery here. The central image in the song, take out your gold teeth and see how they roll, as if you take out your gold teeth and then throw them across a craps table and see how your gold teeth roll. The answer they reveal, life is unreal. And so it's this kind of surrealist image of taking your gold teeth out of your mouth and gambling with them on a gambling table, and then they turn into a divination device. And the answer that they tell you is in this song.
These children who scheme and run wild.